All right. Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Will Tuttle. Just getting set up here. And thank you all so much for joining us this evening. I'm delighted to be here. And let me see. So it's September 17th, 2020. And this is our World Peace Diet Circle call. I'm still just double checking everything. And thanks again, all of you, for the efforts that you're making to help create a more compassionate and sane world for everyone. Looks like we've got our audio working properly. Yeah, that's good. Okay, so fantastic. Wow, great to see you all. Feel free, probably the best thing for the beginning part of the call is to, everybody's pretty much muted, I think. You can have your camera on if you want. It's up to you, or you turn it off. We'll be having a meditation here shortly. I think we'll start with that, and then I'll talk about a few things, and then we can open it up for your questions. And, of course, always know that if you want to ask a question, just press star 6 or raise your hand, or in worst case, just unmute yourself and share whatever your question is. So this has been, such an adventure this year of challenges and learning. And I just appreciate each and every one of you for the many efforts that you're making, because I know that staying abreast of what's happening and then also being able to just deal with the many dimensions of this, the logistics are really hard, loved ones, relationships, getting, shopping, doing things, it's much harder than normal. And to continue to be a vegan activist and advocate, it's just a lot more, even on top of what we're already been doing here. So there are a lot of people working hard in spite of this, and I think one of the most important things we can do, of course, is to go to the roots. Remember what Henry David Thoreau said? He said that for every 1,000 people hacking at the branches of evil, there's only one going to the roots. And this is what we're all about here at the World Peace Diet, is getting to the roots of the challenges, the dilemmas, the problems, violence in our world today, and looking at our routine mistreatment of animals for food as the underlying spinning fury at the core of our culture that we keep failing to address really adequately. So, all right, so anyway, but we're delighted to have you all with us and to be on the same page basically with things. So I'm going to go ahead and begin our meditation time. Invite all of us, wherever you happen to be out there, whatever time zone you're in, and I know some people come from far away. Some people will be listening to this later, of course. I'm sitting at the piano again, which I'm really glad I can do this now. So let's allow ourselves to enter more deeply into our time of meditation. Relaxing if you'd like, if you can, if you're not driving or whatever. And entering into this present moment where we abide always in the eternal presence of the infinite love that is the source of all life. So with every exhalation, letting go of any thoughts of the past, of the future, and allowing ourselves to enter more deeply into this present moment. The only holy moment is this present moment. Contains the infinite potential of being. We can always awaken more deeply, more brightly, right now. Abiding in this moment, and giving thanks for this precious opportunity of this day, this time together, this human birth, this human life, for this opportunity of an auspicious birth, knowing that every moment of this life can be dedicated to awakening to the truth that we are, to the infinite light that shines in every cell of our being, that shines in the cell of every living being. So we give thanks for the dance of creation, for all the beautiful animals celebrating their lives on this abundant earth, all with their unique purposes, with their awareness, with their interests, bringing beauty, joy, and freedom, capability, exemplifying intelligence, teaching us how to deepen our compassion and understanding. We give thanks for all of the teachers in our lives, all the teachings that have helped to awaken our minds and hearts, the teachings of all the traditions that help us awaken to the infinite interconnectedness of all life, the web of life out of which we can never fall. And so now, abiding in our heart, we radiate loving kindness into the entire web of life, breathing and radiating love. Sending love to all living beings. We reject no one. We allow our love and our heartfelt wishes of benevolence and kindness and respect and compassion to bless all living beings. And we send this love to the unique and beautiful being that we are as well. Abiding in love, abiding in compassion, abiding in joy, the joy of being, a bubbling spring of joy at the very core of our being, in every cell of our being. Our true nature is infinite joy that needs no reasons in the outer world. Abiding in joy and radiating the truth of this joy to all living beings. May all beings be filled with joy and abiding in peace. Breathing and radiating peace and harmony. Abiding in our true home of inner peace. And from this inner peace, every thought, word, and deed, we help to build and create and nurture a world of peace for all living beings, a world of respect and abundance of wisdom, abiding in gratitude, abiding in freedom. The basic and eternal freedom that is our true nature, that nothing can take away. May all beings be free. May all beings be at peace. May all beings abide in the awareness of their true nature. And may we all continue working together to help build a more enlightened society, a world that cares for all living beings, a world that protects the innocent and the vulnerable, that protects animals and ecosystems and future generations. We send our love and appreciation to all of the fellow human beings, part of our human family, working. Everyone doing their part to build this more enlightened society. And we see the pathway opening into a bright future. A birthing of a more awakened world, a world based on the vegan principles of ahimsa, of kindness. We give thanks knowing this is so. And so it is. All right. Thank you, all of you, for joining us from wherever you are, being part of this community. Delighted to see you or just feel your presence and be aware that you're with us. And never doubt that any effort that you make towards healing and towards blessing others is ever lost. It all becomes part of the ground of benevolence and part of the creation, really, of the momentum that is building in our world today, in spite of how it looks. I know in many ways it looks like things are going in the opposite direction. But I think it's really important for us to understand that what we are is spiritual beings. We're not just physical objects that we're born and will die, that we're here with a purpose. And very often adversity is part of the growth that we've chosen in this moment, perhaps chosen before. And so the adversity can help bring out the best in us, actually. It can help us to really learn more about ourselves and to learn more about our situation and understand more deeply what's really going on in this universe, which is an adventure that we can always explore more deeply. So I know that if you're on this call, you're already questioning the official stories in our society. You're already on the path of veganism, which is, I think, the most benevolent thing we can do is to live a life where we're consciously bringing our mind and our body and our actions and our principles into alignment. So that we don't have these conflicting belief systems and say, oh yeah, I'm a very loving person. I just like to have a good steak. So to realize that our actions make a huge difference in how we what we buy, how we speak, it all ripples out. And the ripples go out, the ripples come back. And the more we send out love and appreciation and awareness, the more that not only blesses us and our loved ones, but really all of us, because we're all interconnected. So that's the underlying principle, and this is something we're not taught in our society. We're taught the opposite. We're taught basically that we can go after what we want for ourselves, and we can manipulate others, and if need be, we can push them aside and get what we want. And so we have a whole economic, political, and educational, and in many ways even a religious system based on this kind of self-centered materialism. I want salvation for myself. I want profits for myself. And in some of the traditions, you know, there's really, some of them that I actually have studied pretty intensely, there's even a question of whether there is a self, actually. And I think it's healthy to question that, because it's important to question everything and to question the deepest assumptions about the nature of reality. And this is probably the biggest one. You mean that there isn't a self? How can you ever say that? I mean, I know here I am. This is me. You know, this is my. I know my own name, and I look in the mirror, and that's me. There I am. I can compare my ID, and that's me. Yep, I can see that's who I am. And everybody agrees. I have a name and a form. It's called Nama Rupa in Sanskrit. And of course, the problem is we get trapped in that delusion in many ways. And we end up finding that when we believe that, we also begin to see others merely as the name and form that they are. And that tends to make everything an object. So one of the things I keep harping on, really, is that veganism is just the first step of an adventure of awakening. It's a very important first step, but we should never think that now that we're vegan, we're done, we're there, and now we just have to change other people. Because the more I try to change other people, very often what I find is the more they resist. And if I insist that I'm right and they're wrong, very often they'll dig their heels in. And pretty soon we have a movement that in many ways is polarizing, but not and being very self-righteous, and then we start criticizing each other, even within the movement. And it's happening quite a bit, whether you believe science or how you believe science, or how you if you're really doing vegan activism correctly. And I think we all have our own unique ministry, our own unique way of bringing veganism to the world. And I can't say how someone else should do it. But the underlying idea is that if we see veganism as a practice rather than as a state of being, we see it as a practice that we can always practice, and we can always practice better. If I say, well, I play the piano and I'm done, you know, I can't ever be any better than I am. I can never learn a new melody or a new rhythm or a new chord pattern. I'm totally stuck in a rut that just cuts off all creativity, right? That's obvious. If I said that as a writer, if I said that as a tennis player, whatever. So progress only comes when we see what we're doing as a practice, and we can always practice. Sometimes it's not that hard in a way to practice on pigs and cows and chickens because we don't see them. They're not insulting us or judging us. But the way we practice in our relationships with other human animals, human beings, I think really gives us the opportunity to grow and learn. So one of the things that I was thinking of talking about during the call today that comes up, I think, for all of us is the whole question of loss. You know, we feel, I think, in many ways that we're losing. We try to get things and then we lose, you know, and then we have this pain of loss of we lose people. I mean, that's the thing, you know, everything that we get, we are going to lose. And there's in the Buddhist tradition, there are something called the six paramitas, which are the attitudes that we should cultivate to become more aware. And the first one is dana paramita, which is generosity. The idea is to practice generosity. And one of the underlying ideas, though, is that being generous means to be willing to give to others if they need it, and to help them, give of our time, give of our resources, our money, our energy, our creativity, our love, our whatever. But there's another thing even deeper than that, which is letting go. Just being able to let go, and this can be the hardest thing. And I speak, you know, certainly from experience. It's hard to not experience grief, for example. If something happens, we lose loved ones, or we lose opportunities, or we lose years in our life when we could have done something else, and we feel this loss, this grief. Where does that come from? And so I think all of us, if we're on a path of veganism, whether we know it or not, we're on a spiritual path. We can't help it. You know, spirituality and veganism, I think, are really wedded at the hip. You know, they're two sides of the same coin in many ways, because spirituality, authentic spirituality, is seeing beyond the illusion of materialism, of seeing beings as things, as objects, or myself as a thing or an object, and seeing the consciousness, the life force, the being that's present. So we have, of course, been raised in a society of materialism. So we have a vegan movement in many ways that's materialistic, and we try to reduce everything to the greatest good for the greatest number, and sort of this rationalistic kind of approach where we have the sort of dry ethical standards that we try to impose on society and on each other. And that's, you know, that's okay on that level. It's a sort of a male way of doing things. But I think, you know, the really living juicy force and power of veganism is in the spiritual awakening, and it's actually discovering the truth of life. That's what transforms us. I think I've told the story. I'll just tell the story because it's coming to mind. Some of you may have heard it, but I'll just tell it once more because I just love this story, and it's a true story. There's a guy, whose name I forget now, but he was in Wisconsin. And he decided to become a pig farmer, and he did it. He went into it a little bit later in life, middle age. He wasn't raised in it, and he wanted to be a pig farmer for pigs and treat them really well, you know. And so he was doing that, and he was making some money. He was doing pretty well. He was selling his pigs. You know, he would ship them off. He had some land, and he was feeding them, and he was shipping them off. And he would get pretty good money because they were local, free range, you know, kind of, so they had more money per pound. But after several years of doing this, his conscience started to bother him because he really got attracted to the, you know, and attached to the pigs, and he really began to see them as individuals. And then the day would come when he would just send them all off on a truck, and then he'd start the process again. So finally, one day he said, "I'm going to just go and see what happens, what they go through." And he went to the local slaughterhouse, which was kind of a small-scale local slaughterhouse, and he watched what happened. He just forced himself to watch what happened, and he was beside himself with grief and with horror, really, just to see how they were just cold-blooded, just their throats were cut, and that was it. And he was beside himself. He didn't know what to do. His whole idea of doing this business just evaporated. He felt like a terrible person for contributing to this kind of violence. And so he was kind of walking around half in a daze, and he went into the front of around the other side of the slaughterhouse, where they actually had a small store, and where they sold, because they would process the meat. It was mainly pigs, I think, and they would smoke it and they would sell it. And so there was a woman in there, and she was just buying some ham or something like that. And she was walking out, and the store clerk said, "Oh, and here's Bob. He's one of our one of our local producers, pork producers." And the woman looked at him and looked him straight in the eye and said, "Bob, wow, thank you so much for what you're doing. You know, it's really a fantastic service you're giving to us, to our community." And he was so taken aback because he felt so terrible after what he had just seen. But then she was praising and thanking him so deeply and so authentically. So he kind of got back in his truck and went back to the farm and thought, yeah, you know, I mean, if people are going to eat this stuff, I mean, I might as well be the one, you know, and I need the money and so forth. So he went on for about another year. doing the same thing. And the way he tells the story is so interesting, because it was just a typical morning, nothing unusual. He went out. It was a cold morning. The snow, I think, was just a little bit of snow on the ground. And he went out to the pig, you know, pen there, and he started throwing the grain around, and all the pigs came running over, and they were nestling around his leg. And for just a moment, suddenly, the scales fell away, and he saw these beings as beings. It was like a moment out of time where he just suddenly saw these pigs not as pigs, but as beings of light. The whole thing just suddenly illuminated, and he was looking down and he saw these beings of light just around him, in a very transformational moment, really, for him. And then it just faded very quickly, and there they were. They were just pigs again, you know, rooting around and eating the food. And he put everything away, and he went back into his house, and he got on the phone, and he started making arrangements that all these pigs have to go to a sanctuary. He knew he was done. It's over. I mean, that was it. There was no question. That moment of actually seeing these beings as beings, he didn't need anything more. That was it. And he went on to successfully create an alternative. And there's actually a movie about it, but the movie is pretty good. I think it's called The Last Pig Farmer or something like that. I watched it, but unfortunately the movie maker doesn't really do this scene, which I've heard him, you know, tell it, or I've read him telling it, but it's not in the movie. I wish it was. But anyway, so I think there's something very important in that understanding, that I think all of us perhaps have had an experience like that, where we just, for a moment, we got a glimpse, and suddenly it's like we learned in that moment more than if we had read 1,000 books. You know, it's like we just suddenly understand something, and it can really be a transformational moment. So I think what we're about really in the vegan movement, from my point of view, is to do the best we can to instill within our own consciousness the kind of awareness where we are alive with this understanding that what we are is eternal consciousness. What all beings are is that. And so if we lose someone in our life to remember, or a companion animal, you know, it's like, oh, you know, they're gone, and we feel grief, it's pain of that. But the idea that they're not dead, right? I mean, no one dies. You change clothes, change the appearance. But the idea of that, to understand that deeply, and then there's almost, from my point of view, a sense of actual joy that comes up. Like, wow, now they've gone on to another experience. How fantastic, you know, because it's a new opportunity for them, a beautiful opportunity. We can have joy in their joy. You know, that's one of the four Viharas, is joy in the joy of others. And when if you've studied, like, probably the near-death experiences, I mean, that's one of the main things that goes through. If someone has a heart attack or is hit by lightning or whatever, and they go to the hospital and they're clinically dead, and then the medical personnel work on them, you know, and try to bring them back to life, and sometimes they're successful. They bring them back. You know, the main thing they always say is, dang, you know, why did you bring me back? It was so great. I don't want to be back here. You know, so so really, I mean, I don't think we have to feel bad for other beings, you know, if they pass. It's really for ourselves. You know, we miss them. But I think that sense of loss can be transformed or raised to a higher octave, in a sense, by connecting with the joy that they're experiencing. And also, another aspect I want to just mention is that the emotions that we have, these are powerful. And to understand that we personally can take responsibility for our thoughts and emotions. You know, we're talking about taking responsibility for our behavior, right? Being a vegan is taking responsibility for our behavior. But taking responsibility for our behavior is also taking responsibility for our thoughts, for our feelings, our emotions. And our emotions really follow our thoughts and the paradigm, our belief system. So if we change our belief system and our understanding, our emotions follow naturally. It's not like we have to work at it. So if I have a certain belief system and someone dies, or I lose someone, or I lose something, it can be devastating, because I'm identified with that relationship with that person and so forth. So I'm really, so the whole thing is very painful. However, we can change the channel. I think that's very important to understand. We can change the channel. We can question that belief system. We can adopt another one that's perhaps more in line with the nature of reality, and something that would make us feel angry or sad, we can just feel love or joy or peace about. And we don't have to struggle to get to that place. We can just be there, because when we understand at a deeper level, we can be there. And so instead of being really hurt by what other people say, for example, we can feel a sense of love for them in any event, or a sense of understanding, at least from where they're coming from, if they are insulting to us or do something that seems to harm us or harm the world even. We can have a sense of understanding. So I think the whole idea is to keep increasing the frame that we see things. The bigger we make the frame, the less likely we're going to be caught by the fish hooks that grab us with barbs, our flesh, by what people say or what the world does or how we lose things. We're going to lose everything anyway. So sometimes when we lose things more rapidly, that can be a result of spiritual practice, perhaps. You know, there's that when I was in the Kagyu school of Tibetan Buddhism studying, I studied for quite a few years in that tradition in San Francisco, and there's four main lineages, the Dalai Lama's and the Gelugpa, but the Kagyu is considered the practice lineage, where you instead of like the Dalai Lama's lineage, the Gelugpa's, you do a lot of studying and reading and all that kind of stuff and debating. The Kagyus are all about meditation, just going off into a cave and meditating and practicing hard and meditating. And so the nickname of the Kagyu lineage is the accident lineage. They call themselves the accident lineage because the idea is when you're doing a lot of practice, you're ripening karma more quickly. And so you're going to lose everything faster and faster. You can have all kinds of disasters are happening. And you should celebrate that. Say, that's good. You know, hey, another disaster. Great. You know, and the idea is it's a good thing. It shows that, wow, I'm strong. I'm strong enough to handle this. Let's see if I'm strong enough to handle that. You know, and then the next thing. It's because the harder you practice, the more disasters are going to hit you. Right? I mean, then you should say, wow, fantastic. I got another one. Can't wait to see what good's going to come out of this one. Something good's always going to come out. We're in essentially a benevolent universe. I mean, I can't tell you that. It's something we can discover. But underlying everything is we're here to grow and learn and awaken to the infinite beauty and truth. And when people awaken spiritually, they don't get more and more, you know, selfish and mean and unhappy. They get more and more joyful and generous and free and creative, right? I mean, we see that in any tradition. I mean, authentic awakening does that. So because people are awakening to the same thing. So that's why veganism is an aspect of this awakening. Veganism is an aspect of discovering that there's one life living through all of us, and the more I bless others and I'm kind to others, the happier I'm going to be, you know, essentially. So it's kind of, you know, in that sense, it is selfish. Like the more I give everything away, the happier I'm going to be. And it's just a matter of learning how to actually live that way in a world that does not understand that at all. And where we could, we have to, in some ways, I guess we need to balance that. And, you know, I mean, I remember living as a Buddhist monk, and I just loved it because there was no finances. I mean, zero. You don't worry about that. You know, you're just meditating and practicing, and that's just not part of the equation. And that was one of the reasons I never wanted to leave there, because I thought, I'm just getting paid to meditate, right? That's what I always wanted when I was younger, and at one point it happened. But I find that, you know, coming back into the world, in a sense, it demands of us even more creativity and resilience, because we're practicing within the fires of raw cultural, in many ways, insanity around us. And to bring our presence to people when they're frenzied or scared or judgmental or angry or shaming, to be able to be a force for understanding and kindness for the few years we're going to be on this earth, because we're all going to be leaving some way, one way or the other, to just do it while we're here, because we're here for our own unique purpose. And some people are here for one thing, some people are here for something else, so there's no way we can compare ourselves to others. Each one of us has our reason for being. So there's a lot we can kind of unpack about all that, but I wanted to just say that, and also perhaps we can even get to the point where we can find joy in every emotion. Like I can be grieving the loss of my father, for example, but in a sense enjoying grieving, right? I mean, because underlying that, I mean, why am I grieving? Because it's something fulfilling. And, you know, the idea is to not be trapped by these emotions, especially the negative emotions that, you know, anger, for example, can really create a lot of suffering for us and for others. And so to be able to flip that, to flip it into laughter, to flip it into, aha, I caught myself. And, you know, you've heard me tell that story. When I was in Korea, I was doing the four viharas all the time. And then one day, it only happened, you know, once a month or so, or even less. All the foreign monks, the Western monks, there was a few of us there, from one guy from Denmark and a couple from England and me and a guy from Germany. And anyway, there's a few of us and this, a bunch of Koreans. And, so the lay people would, every once in a while, would bring some cake for the Western monks. It was like a little, for, you know, just a moral support. And it was nice. It was really nice to get it because we're just eating rice. That was it, rice and veggies. And so I remember getting my cake and in the afternoon, I think it was. And then I thought, oh, I'm not going to eat it now. I'll put it in my little locker. I had a locker. And then I thought, oh, maybe later I'll have it. And so I went back later and the cake was gone. And I was like kind of really looking forward to it, you know, like it's going to have a little cake here. And it was gone. And so, you know, the point is that at that moment when I saw the cake was gone, my mind, just because of the practice, you know, I was practicing the four Viharas every day. And so it just sort of automatically went to, wow, one of my brothers, you know, one of the monks had his own cake and then he had mine. That must have been great, having two. My mind just went there. Like, I didn't try. Just like I just thought, wow, that must. He had one, he had another. That must have been so cool. And I just felt so happy that this guy, somebody, I didn't know who it was, had two. I was just smiling from ear to ear. I was, like, thrilled. You know, I was, like, totally happy. So I didn't have to, like, work through my anger and try to forgive and blah, 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 you know. All that baloney. You know, it's like if we just practice – understanding that there's another way of living, that we can generate an attitude of joy in the joy of others. So when someone cuts us off, you know, we don't have to yell at them mentally. We can just say, all right, you know, send you love. Then the emotions, these so-called conflicting emotions don't actually ever find a place, any toehold in us. And it's better for people around us. It's better for us. And it's really much better for our health, you know, because these negative emotions really, it's like we have a pharmacy inside of us, and we're sending all these conflicting emotions to the cells in our being, and they're going like, "What the heck? What am I supposed to do here now? Am I supposed to run away? Am I supposed to attack?" And so they're, it's much harder, I think, for us to be healthy, especially if we're in stressful relationships. That's why relationships are so important if we want to be healthy. A lot of people think that going vegan means you're always going to be healthy because you're eating healthy food, especially if you're organic, whole foods, plant-based diet, right? That's the absolute guarantee you'll always be healthy. And then people say, well, you know, they're eating a whole food, organic, plant-based diet, and look at this, they got sick. You know, must not be that great. Well, of course, I mean, there's countless factors, you know, impinging on our physical health. I mean, things from the past, of course, for one thing. But our mind, I mean, our mind, our emotions is huge. It's huge. I can be eating the most perfect diet, but if I'm harboring jealousy or anger to other people or overly controlling about everything around me, you know, who knows? I mean, all kinds of problems are going to probably arise in my physical body because our body is a direct outpicturing of our mind in many ways. It's a direct. We're creating it. We're creating our physical body and our life through our beliefs and our actions and our thoughts and our feelings and just the inner feeling tones. You know, we have these inner tones, the very personal, deep, intimate tone of our being. If it's a tone of, it's unique, you know, a tone of joy or what is it? You know, our unique being. And to kind of be aware of that. Madeline and I used to travel. As you know, for 18 years, we lived in an RV, and we would give a talk on Sunday morning at a Unity church, and then we would do a workshop on developing intuition, and then we'd tell people, if anyone's interested, we can do an individual session for you, and the person or a couple, usually it was an individual, sometimes a couple would sit next to the piano, and Madeline would get out of her card table and paint a painting for a half an hour, and while she was doing that, I would just tune into the person, and I just play for half an hour, and like their spirit would basically come through me as music. And I did hundreds of these, probably, you know, thousands actually. And the music was always different. And I could always get it. I mean, something, I don't know if I always get it right, but I would always be inspired by something in that being. And it was very often I would have tears and they would have tears because it would be so beautiful to connect with the being beyond the level of the personality. And we go around with these masks on, this is who I am, blah, 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 and we have this whole thing. And people would come in and say, oh, you know, my music's going to probably be really, really terrible because I feel, oh, man, I feel so upset about things that are not going well in my life right now. The music's probably going to be really disharmonious. And I would sit there and I start playing, and it would be this very often beautiful harmony. And I, you know, because the, you know, the outer level of the being, maybe that's what they're thinking about and they're experiencing, but at a deeper level, there's a tremendous beauty and joy at this experience of a human life. It's a great opportunity. And people are, so if we can connect with that, that truth of our being, and that's what I love, you know, creating music from that level, seeing, you know, seeing beyond the outer level to the deeper level. That's how each one of us can become a healer. And the way we heal, we become a healer like Jesus. You know, Jesus was healing everybody. How did he heal? He healed them because he didn't see, when the person was crippled, he didn't look at them and say, oh, there's a cripple in front of me. He didn't even see that. He saw a perfect divine being, and he knew it. He knew it so strongly that it transferred right to their reality if they were open. We can all do that, right? I mean, we can all look at others. I can look at somebody and say, oh, look at that guy. What a jerk. You know, he's not a vegan. He's, you know, we just reinforce that in them. We just create more obstacles for them. It's going to be harder for them to go vegan if we look at them that way. If I look at someone, even if they're eating meat or they're being abusive or whatever, I say, if I can look at them and see beyond the outer form to the being and see that there's in there, there's a loving being, maybe, you know, on the outer level, very wounded, very harmed, maybe abused as a child, got a lot of issues and so forth. But if we see beyond that, we can become a healer. We don't have to say anything. Just seeing that, automatically their being acknowledges it. And I think it's something we can always do. You know, I love walking down the street or through, I remember I used to do it a lot in the airport or wherever, and just sending love and just seeing beings as beings, not looking at the outer form, just seeing the being. If they're fat or thin or tall or short or black or white, none of that matters. You just see the being. And send them love, and they don't turn their head usually, but on some level I think they get it, right? They acknowledge it and they give thanks, or we salute each other. It's like, you know, we salute the beings, we can salute each other. We can recognize that what we are is eternal, and when we do that, I think create a foundation of a vegan world, because a vegan world is one that respects all expressions of life. So I think these are the kinds of things that are now being especially demanded of us because of the increase in fear. You know, is it like this? And that's the word I want to emphasize here is contagion. You know, this idea of contagion is a very important word. And I think what we're doing right now is we're being bombarded by, I think, from my point of view, a mass media that is essentially hostile to our awakening. You know, and I've known this. I mean, I've been a vegan advocate for 40 years, and I've understood that, you know, the pharmaceutical industry, the big, you know, these big industries, the financial industry, the petroleum industry, the chemical industry, the food industries, all of these are the big advertisers, and so they control the media. So we poor people, we're being bombarded with toxic messages all the time. So the message coming out now is that we're all contagious. Anyone can be contagious. We have to wear masks so we don't, because we're all dangerous. Everyone's dangerous. Everyone's dangerous to each other. We don't look at people and go, hey, hi, how you doing? And hug them and shake their hand and, stay away. You're contagious. You have bad energy, bad germs. You know, it's cooties, something. You're going to hurt me. And so there's this incredibly powerful blasting of this message in order to divide and conquer the people, you know, to turn, livestock, basically, to create a livestock society. So I think it's important to be contagious ourselves, you know. So I love being, that's one of the things that Madeline and I have talked about actually for years. They were contagious. You know, look out, you're going to catch love, joy and peace and harmony. And I'm sending it out wherever I go. You know, we can be contagious of that. We are. I mean, we can be in every moment. We can, because we are. I mean, we are all very telepathic. And so if we have a situation of fear, you know, fear tends to shut down our immune system, tends to shut down our cells. They don't know what to do. They're thinking, well, why should I celebrate my life here in this body, the liver cells and all that, if you're just afraid you're going to die, right? They start shutting down because that's the messages we're giving. So when we consciously question that and do the opposite and celebrate another day and another opportunity to give and to share and to be part of the healing here and be contagious, you know, we can be contagious, of bringing peace and freedom and joy and creativity and abundance and gratitude to all of our relations, however they are, with the people close to us and on the internet and whatever, and just to the birds and the insects around us in the yard. We are a center of consciousness on this earth, and we are powerful. The more congruent we are, the more powerful we are. Because most people walking around don't meditate regularly. They're not that congruent. So there's a lot of, you know, positive and negative all kind of mixed together. So you have really strong positive people can really make a big impact, much bigger than our numbers. Same thing with negative. Really strong negative can do the same. But most people are not one or the other. They're kind of a mix. So us as but I think ultimately the negative power doesn't have power, because ultimately it's going against the flow of the universe, which is towards understanding and living the understanding that there's one life living through all of us. So those are the ideas I've been contemplating over the last few weeks that I wanted to share with you. The other aspect I'll just say, which I think is interesting, is the symbolism of a lot of things that are going on right now in our society, of masquerade, the masquerade, the charade, the false appearing as true, the evil appearing as good. Now, this is something that I'm learning more and more about. You know, in the Buddhist tradition, we have the idea of Maya, or the idea of Mara. In the Christian tradition, of course, we have the idea of Lucifer or Satan or the devil or whatever. You know, like this force that sort of seems to divide and keep us in suffering and pain and delusion. And I think the underlying idea is that what's going on, what's been going on, what's happening right now in our society, you can see it very clearly, is that what is false is portraying itself as true. What is good is, what is evil or harmful is portraying itself as good. I used to use this all the time in my talks on veganism. I was saying this pretty much in every lecture. I started talking about the Trojan horse, because, you know, I used to teach mythology. And the Trojan horse is, to me, is a great example, because you have this horse that the Greeks created, which looks like this beautiful gift. And they all climbed up inside of it, and the people in Troy, the king thought, wow, this was given to us by the gods, so they brought it into the city, and they thought it was something to help them, something wonderful, and yet the whole point of that horse was to kill and destroy those people. That was it. What that was its purpose. So I've been saying animal agriculture is a Trojan horse. And we're born into a society where we're told, I'm talking to little kids, that, oh, meat gives you protein and milk gives you calcium, and it's really delicious, it's good, it's what our people eat, this is how we live, this is what made the country great. You know, it's just all positive. It's like the Trojan horse, all good, good, good. And then if we wake up, like the people of Troy learned, oh no, this is absolutely destroying my physical health, my psychological health, my spiritual health, our environmental health, our cultural health. It's nothing about it. It's positive. It's all negative. It's destroying us. So there's several of these going on in our society. To me, this is the big one. You know, animal agriculture is the big evil appearing good. Another one, though, there's two more. I'd say there's two more big ones, maybe more, but two really obvious big ones. Another one is the chemical. You know, we are creating, at least 80,000 toxic chemicals that we are spewing into the environment. And we're also injecting or taking into our bodies. And we have chemical industries that create all these chemicals. They're poisons. They're toxic. And they end up in the food and the water and the air. And yet we're always told that they're good, that these chemicals, it's part of the green revolution. We get more food than ever. And a lot of them are drugs that are given to animals or drugs that are given to us. And so we go to the doctor, right, and we don't feel good, and so they give us a chemical. And they're always toxic. They are always toxic. They're always harmful. There's always side effects. And they're always poisonous. And there's thousands of these. And we take them in and we excrete them back into the environment. And so this is a huge Trojan horse. We have to realize that toxic chemicals into our bodies, into the bodies of our children, into the body of the earth, it's destroying life. It's destroying our intelligence. It's destroying our capacity of living clearly and creatively. These chemicals harm us at a very deep level, physically, psychologically, spiritually, culturally, environmentally, all five levels. These chemicals are destructive. So that's another big one. It comes out of animal agriculture. It comes out of corporations. You know, we created corporations because we want to avoid responsibility. That's what a corporation is. And animal agriculture is about avoiding responsibility. The third big one that most people don't think about too much, but I've done quite a bit of research into this too, and I think this is huge, is the financial Trojan horse. You know, we had at one point, we started having bankers lending money. And I mean, you know, the way the system is set up, when they loan money, they create money right there. You create 90, you know, it's a 10-to-1. So you loan $100, you know, $90 is created out of thin air. It goes onto the balance sheet as an asset for the bank. You have to have $10, you know, out of reserves. You have to cover, but 90% becomes an asset. So they're just, so the M1 money supply keeps growing and growing and growing because of banks making loans to businesses, to individuals, to governments. So we want to buy a house, we make a loan. We get money from the bank, and we want to start a business, so we get a loan. And so they're creating money out of thin air that is their money, these bankers. If we don't pay our mortgage, they take our house. They take our business. They take our farm. They own it. Even if we've already paid half or two-thirds of it off of their money that they create, then they take what, and we're seeing this happen now with this whole COVID thing. You know, millions of people are going to lose their homes because they can't make the payments because their jobs, they don't have jobs. And so the bank, so there's this massive transfer of wealth, of money that has just been created out of thin air. See, people don't understand this. Most people don't understand the enormous woundedness and unfairness and injustice that these three scams, these are three big scams, really. Animal agriculture, chemicals, and finance, banks, interest. And they're huge, and they're just accepted completely. They're in the meat. They're always talk about is great. You know, your banker's your friend, your druggist, your doctor, they're your friends. I mean, they're really just pushing toxic drugs, basically. But or your butcher is your friend. You know, these ideas. So to really understand this clearly, I think is important. I mean, another big one, of course, would be you know, that the military is helping save us from terrorism. I think it's probably another big scam too. But these three are huge. And so I think the point is that the forces that are behind these powerful scams, they're powerful, they're really hoaxes, that are dominating us and exploiting us and destroying the planet on every level. Because the bankers are behind everything. And they're behind the big drug companies, they're behind the big pharmaceutical, chemical, animal, agriculture, everything. They're always masquerading, right? It's good. It's like evil or harmfulness masquerading as something good and healthy and helpful. So there's this mask. It's all about the mask. It's totally about the mask. They're always wearing a mask. They're not showing their true face ever. Corporations don't show their true face. They do public relations. And so veganism, I have to say, is about looking beyond the mask, seeing what's actually there, it's painful. You know, you think, oh, this is my friendly local corporation, whatever, but to see what's actually there. So I find it very interesting that these powerful forces that are always wearing masks, that are never showing themselves truly, how they want everyone to wear a mask. This whole idea of walking around is why seeing everyone wearing masks, and that we're in a sense being forced into this by the mask masters, the masters of mask wearing, who are masquerading constantly. That's all they do. They're never telling the truth ever. When we hide behind a false illusion, we lose our own soul, really. I mean, we lose we don't ever lose our soul, but we lose our connection with our soul, our spirit, our true nature. So I think this is really what we're facing right now in our society, is it's a spiritual battle, whether we can connect as individuals and as a society strongly with our true nature and expose those who are wearing the masks for what they are, and establish a society based on truth, like Gandhi said, on Satyagraha, where we don't mask anything. We have transparency, right? Transparency is what we're talking about. So we really know what's actually going on. Who's controlling the narrative? That's the question. So I think this is the underlying challenge for us right now on these different levels. Number one is individuals, to be true to ourselves, to take time every day to do our spiritual practice. For me, that's meditation. You know, taking time, at least an hour every morning, to just be quiet and listen and connect with the joy of being that doesn't need any reasons in the outer world, that what I am is not this body. It's what vivifies this body. It makes it possible, but far, far greater. And see that in others. But we can't see it in others if we don't see it in ourselves. So to take time every day, this is really critical work to do. This is the real work, I think, in many ways. And then that our relationships follow from that. And then that we be savvy, right? That we be aware and look behind masks. Don't be afraid to take the mask off of somebody, off of a corporation or a governmental institution or a media outlet or a news reporter or even of yourself, right? Friends and family. I mean, what's really behind? And to see, to understand as deeply as we can what's really going on. So I think this is the process we're going through, and it's really reaching a fever pitch. I think there's some kind of a birthing process happening. A dying process is happening. When something is born, something dies. When we're born into this world, we die on the other side. And when we die here, we're born on what they call the other side, right? So death is a letting go. And I think we all know that the old normal, it was really unsustainable. It was terrible. What we see is the new normal coming looks even worse on some levels, but I think it's up to us to make it better, to somehow be the as Gandhi said, the change we want to see in the world, to keep our freedoms at a deeper level, and to spread the vegan message of compassion and respect for all life, because that's the fundamental message. That's, without that, if we keep doing animal agriculture, war, chemicalization, exploitation by financial institutions, all these things are going to keep going, obviously, as you all know. So those are my thoughts that I wanted to share. We have a little bit of time before we need to wrap it up. So I'm happy to respond to any comments or questions anyone has, or other people can respond. We can kind of open it up here for your thoughts and feelings and questions, because I really think, this is a precious opportunity. We just have it once a month, this opportunity. So
hi, Will.
Feel free to speak. Yeah, who's this?
Andy,
okay. Hi, Andy. Yes.
Hi. First, as usual, thank you so much. Everything you say every time is always just what I need to hear. I have a question. So I wanted to know, like, when you guys had to evacuate for the fire, and you show those great pictures of yoga and things like that, and I've seen Madeline on the ball, you know, doing different things like that, and yet you're accomplishing all these other things. It seems like you're staying up to date with everything. I think I've been getting lost with, you know, since this thing started. The great thing is so many people have been speaking up, and highly credentialed people who have a lot to lose that are speaking up.
Right.
And I started watching every video, and I started letting go of my working out. And I know you say you do about an hour of meditation a day, I think, but do you mind sharing maybe like how you schedule each day? Like, how much time do you put into, let's say, yoga or meditation? But then also, how much time do you put into, you know, watching what's new? And how do you choose to let go of? Because to me, trying to learn everything it's not even possible. I started becoming overwhelmed and depressed. But now I'm at the point where I barely watch anything anymore, and, you know, I just feel tired. And so how do you, like, schedule your day? Like, how much time do you give to each day to learning what you feel like is a new, I don't know, news going on or something, or being on Facebook or one of these sites to post things? And how much time do you give to, like, working out or doing yoga or shopping or preparing food? Do you mind sharing some of that? Because I'm just lost now.
Yeah, that's a really good question, Andy. Thanks for asking that, because I think that's
something. I'm going to mute myself
now.
So.
Okay. Right. Yeah, I think that's something that I know I'm having to continually monitor all the time, and stay on top of the various demands and priorities. I think a lot of it's priorities that we have as individuals, and each one of us are in our own unique phase of life where we may or may not have time or create the time for various aspects of what you're talking about. So for me, I just do the most important things first thing in the morning, because once the day starts, you never know what's going to happen. So, like, as soon as I wake up in the morning, we get up pretty early, 4:30. Madeline's up usually at 4:30, and or 5. We're up at 5:15 at the latest. And then, so there's always like a time of meditation. It takes 2 hours till 7:15, I guess. It's meditation, some exercises, a little bit of reading of spiritual books, some journaling. So I do that for 2 hours. That's going to happen no matter what. No matter what, that happens. and then play the piano. And I play, you know, myself. And then Madeline comes out and joins me on the flute. And so that's probably half an hour. And then we spend some time, just the two of us, just connecting and asking how our night went together. You know, just sort of intimate, like, loving time to just really feel the love we have for each other and so forth. That's really important, I think, to take time for relationship. And so that's the beginning. And then Madeline continues on, plays the flute longer. And that's when I begin my day. By then it's maybe, I guess, 8:30, something like that, or 8, I can't remember, 8, maybe 8 o'clock. And then, so that's when I usually, sometimes I work on a project, writing, first thing, so I don't get distracted. Sometimes I go to the computer and kind of open it up and see what's going on and sort of answer emails and that kind of stuff. So the morning is the main time that I'm spending interacting with the world and maybe watching some videos or reading articles. And I have to be, like you say, you know, you have to be really selective and just see, you know, what I want to put my attention on, and I have to answer people's thing, you know, lots of different things, like we all do. And then we always take time. Like, we don't really do much of a lunch anymore. We always have a smoothie in the morning, Then I always go out actually at about 9 and take a, and ride my bike down to the lake and take a swim, and then come back up and then do some Tai Chi and some more exercises and my jump rope. I do 500 jump ropes. That's my real cardio thing. And then come back in and do some more, like at the, and then we have our smoothie. And the smoothie that Madeline makes, you can watch it on her Madeline's Intuitive Cooking YouTube channel. But it's really a good one because it has buckwheat in it, so it has kind of grain, and then veggies and fruit, so it really lasts very well. So then at noon, of course, we do our prayer circle for animals, our little prayer together, and then usually we do about 1 o'clock, we do a power nap, like a 15-minute little nap. So that seems to be a good idea. I usually do. Madeline always does it. I'm doing it now quite often. And then do a little bit more work at the computer. And then we have our afternoon program where we go outside. I mean, we always go outside in the afternoon and work in the garden, something out in the garden or in the yard, and just work just because we love the garden. And there's always stuff to do. And I also do stuff. Like right now I'm painting the entire house, so I'm doing that. So we work from usually, I don't know, 2:30 or 3 till about 5:30. And then we have supper. And that's always like the big meal of the day. In a way, it's not big, but it's usually about 6, and we have our starch and veggies, which is really delicious out on the deck. And then after that, we usually take a walk in the garden and then work, maybe watch, that's when we watch Del Bigtree's High Wire, or maybe other ones that I saw earlier. I thought, well, that's a pretty interesting one. Then we watch it together sometimes, like to get, you know, maybe Brian, what's his name, Rose, some of those, or some, you know, some informative videos. Sometimes we do that in the evening, or else we just, maybe I'll do a few more emails or something. And then we always take time. By 9:30, we stop everything, and Madeline does the ball dancing. She jumps on the ball, and I play the piano. And then very often we take a shower outside, a cold shower. It's really nice. We have an outside shower. We haven't used our inside shower in like 8 years, I don't think. We always take a shower outside, whatever month it is. That's what we do. And then we do a reading. I read a book to Madeline, a spiritual book. We always do that at the end, and then we go to bed. So we kind of have a routine, and there's variety within the routine. But we have certain points where we, no matter what, we're gonna do these things. Pretty much guaranteed, we'll take time for a quiet time in the middle of the day, a nap, and maybe short and meditation. In the end of
okay,
the day,
I
reading,
just
all that stuff.
Will?
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
I just unmuted. I have to thank you so much. My day is so completely different and stressed, and you are just reminding me of everything that I've not been taking time for. So thank you very much. That was incredible and beautiful, and it sounds like how all humans should live. I mean, it's mind-blowing, the cold showers, everything, but, and I know you've talked about that, but first, thank you so much. I'll let someone else go on, but thank you very much. Very helpful. I appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah. You're welcome, Andy. That's a great question. Yeah, I know. It's really how we navigate our day is very important, because it's our time is really our most precious resource. And so to use our time in a way that we feel is in the best interest of ourselves, of our relationships, of our dharma, our work to do in the world, and that's pretty much how we do things. And then of course the other thing is that when we go on the road, then we try to continue that as much as we can, but then we can't. We're living in an RV, or we're flying all over the world, or whatever. So and we historically we've been on the road almost half the year. So we still try to continue that, but now, of course, with COVID, we're not on the road, so we're here, and we have more time to do all kinds of projects in the garden and stuff like that. as well as other things. There's also, I wanted to mention, I just found out that there's going to be something that's interesting. I didn't want to forget to just mention it to you. There's a friend of ours, actually, Jeffrey Smith, who's the founder of the Institute for Responsible Technology, which is basically, I guess you'd say, an anti-GMO organization, probably the biggest one. He lives in Marin County, south of us here. And he had the idea to do an online summit with 40 experts. And the summit, the title of the summit is A Magnificent New Normal. And I just love the title because I think all of us are thinking, oh, this new normal is going to be like a dystopian, horrible thing. But he had this idea of creating this kind of a positive view of a magnificent new normal. And he's gotten some pretty well-known people like Bruce Lipton and the woman, Lynn Twist, you know, from Pachamama Alliance, and a few other people, Jewel, some people. Anyway, but I was talking to him yesterday, and he's invited me to be a presenter for that, and I on intuition. So I think there's something that he's doing that is important. I think it's important for us to, besides being aware of the danger around us, to also create a dialogue, a conversation about the positive possibilities that we have with this whole thing, and to really brainstorm about all the positive things that can come out of what's happening now, and to really make a cultural conversation about that as much as we can, not ignore the problems, but how can we mobilize our resources so that we're fulfilling a higher destiny no matter what happens. You know, the idea that we're in sort of this, you know, we're caterpillars and we're consuming, and now suddenly this whole thing is in some ways impinging on that. We're sort of forced within. Can we come out of this as butterflies? You know, can we come out of this? How can we come out of this in a way that's much more sustainable, much more free and creative? And I think that's something to just be aware of as we in the next month or so. So I'll try to send a link to that and put that up on Facebook too when I get it. I should have that today, later today, if you're interested in watching some of that. But anyway, so that's that. So anyone else have, we have a few more minutes. Anyone else want to ask a question or make a comment while we have time here? April, yeah.
Hi, everybody. I'm almost hesitant to ask this because it might switch the tone of things, and it's been so peaceful tonight. But I don't know if I've missed it or if you have. I haven't really been on the website much lately, but have you talked anything about Q? What? Because you have the research background, and I want to know, in your opinion, is it all hoax, or is that?
You know, that's a good question, which I am not probably the right one to answer, because I actually have not made it a priority to put my research energies into Q. So I've seen reliable, what I consider somewhat pretty reliable voices on both sides. Some that there really is this sort of positive manipulating or maneuvering, I guess is the word, behind the scenes with President Trump and with other people in the military, and there's a work to create a positive future out of all this. And then I've seen other people say, oh, that's just total baloney, and they're just distracting everyone from what's really going on. So I'd rather not try to say much more myself, because I'm just not sure. I think it's nice to think that there's all these positive things that, you know, that they're doing, because you're right. I mean, some of it's really very inspiring that this could really be, you know, this cabal, which seems to be, you know, in power, can be taken down. I think it's important. But I think the problem I have, I guess, partly is I just feel that we, the people, to be worthy of a world of freedom and justice and equality, we have to be vegan. Right? I mean, we have to really, like, transform the way we are living. We can't all be eating animal foods and think, oh, now Q or extraterrestrials or whoever it is somehow going to save us. And then we're going to have a great world after that and keep eating meat and dairy and eggs. You know, we have to absolutely transform ourselves and start talking, you know, continue to bring the vegan message to the world. Because without that, I think we don't have really a positive future, because we're creating a negative future for all these animals, and that's boomeranging back. So that's really critical, I think. And I've, you know, if Q doesn't talk about the importance of going vegan, you know, if that's not part of the message, then there's something, from my point of view, something major is missing. And that's been missing in a lot of the conversation. You know, I've tried to bring it in. We're bringing it in. But I think we need to have more people bringing that in. So that's a great question. Yeah, thanks, April. I don't know if that answers, but thanks.
It is very interesting how that seems to be the key piece, and it's not mentioned for these people who know so much.
Yeah, exactly. Why don't they ever talk about that? It's very interesting. All right. So anyone else want to say something or ask a question? I'm happy. Or still have a few more minutes. Yes, Tammy.
Hi. Hey. I just want to thank you for the space that you hold, you know, for all of us, for the planet, for the animals, for the awakening that's happening right now.
Oh, thanks, Tammy. Great. I appreciate that. And everyone should know what you're doing. You know, Tammy is working, has already got an amazing book out, Earth Gut, which talks about the microbiome and the community of beings within us, and has been working on another book. So you're busy up there in the wilds of Canada and the North Country. So it's great to have you as part of the community. Tammy came all the way to Santa Barbara, or Ojai, actually, just a few months ago when we were there in February, March. I guess it was in March. Right before everything locked down at the esoteric center of the Theosophical Society, and it was really wonderful to be able to share these ideas there. So thank you very much, Tammy.
Thank you. Will's done the honor I've had the honor of Will doing the foreword for my book, and he's going to be editing it probably starting the end of this week. My book called Sacred Sovereignty. So it started last August, but the timing couldn't be better to be talking about our sacred sovereignty and keeping that internal focus that we are sacred and sovereign no matter what the external world is doing.
Mm-hmm. Powerful. That's so important, that word sovereignty and the word sacred sovereignty. I mean, that's really... says it all, actually. It's incredible, actually, yeah. Sovereignty is what we steal from animals and what we'll lose ourselves if we continue on this path. So to reaffirm that and understand it and to honor and respect it is the key to everything, I think. Yeah, thanks, Tammy. Wow.
Really just getting on, like, it's a very unhappy situation for a lot of people right now, but mm-hmm. it's nothing compared to what the animals have endured. Mm-hmm. And so it's just that little piece, you know, of something, just a little bit of our sovereignty taken away. Yeah, we can still do, you know, just a little bit, and they've had none. So I don't know. I guess it's interesting.
That's exactly right. I mean, when we compare what we do to animals, my gosh, they're born into total and complete slavery. Yeah, so at our hands. That's the thing. We have to address that. If we don't address that, we're going nowhere. So
I just wanted to let everybody know that Dr. Sailesh Rao, how do you say
Rao? Yeah, Dr. Sailesh Rao. Yes.
Uh-huh. There's a vegan convergence going on right now. So I don't know if you could put the link in there or It's really good. I'm learning a lot because I'm just really starting to get more overtly involved in the vegan community. And yeah, it's been great. He's a beautiful soul also. And yeah, so I just wanted to let people know that.
Great. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, I've been pretty involved this past week in the, it's called the UP, which stands for Unity and Peace, the UP Convergence. And there's actually a veganism and social transformation convergence room within this larger sort of unity and peace convergence, which is global. It's all online. I was on it this morning for about an hour and a few other times, and it's going to be continuing, I think, for a few more days through the weekend. So you can go to worldpeacedaddict.com and click on upcoming events, and then just go to the dates right now, and the Zoom links is right there. And you can go and see what's going on. There's what's called a Trello, I think it's called, which is the system where you can see all the different tracks going on at once. It's 24/7 for like 10 days. All over the world, people are having conversations about water, about music, about art, about peace, about economics, social justice. And, you know, veganism has been included, which is good. I think it's great that that's been included. But yeah, it's a whole universe of itself happening right now for a few more days. Yeah, thanks, Tammy, for mentioning that. I appreciate it. All right. Wow, well, here we are. It's about time to wrap up. Okay, one more. Anne, are you raising your hand?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you so much for just your positive message, because rather than give in to fear, like, I mean, for me, with the wildfires and what wildlife goes through,
right,
is just horrifying. So sometimes I'm kind of lost in that state. But it's just the fact that things are totally upside down, things are not what they appear, and rather than give a lot of space to the grief and the fear, this is a time of opportunity, a time to see the beauty in everything, no matter how things look. So I just want to thank you for the message. It just brings peace and sanity.
Thank you, Anne. Thanks so much for saying it so well. Yeah, we can see the best. And I think that's really the key thing right now, is to see the beauty around us, appreciate and give thanks for the beauty around us and within the people that are close to us. And keep building from that base and doing the inner work to just uncover it in ourselves. Because we can't change anyone else. We can only change ourselves, this one right here, and find ways. And anything, you know, obviously anything I say that resonates with you, if it doesn't resonate, then let it go. But if it does, I'm glad. I'm happy to be able to be of service in this way. So, gosh, this has been great. I want to send my love, and Madeline sends her love. She's right here. I can hear her in the kitchen right now getting a few things ready. And here she is. Do you want to say hi? There she is. Oh, here's Madeline.
Hello. Hi, everybody. Very, very beautiful evening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. So, I'll just maybe, we can close with just a short piece of music, perhaps, and then we'll see you again. We'll probably do the satsang on the first Monday of October, and then have our regular third Thursday, which will be the third Thursday of October, whenever that is. I don't have my calendar here, but we'll see you then. All right, so here's a short piece of music just to close our time together. I'll dedicate this to the healing of all of our relations, and music can create a field, I think, a field of healing. So this is for the healing and awakening of our world at this time. Enjoy. Okay, thank you everyone. Much love to you all, and compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Have a beautiful rest of the day and a couple of weeks till we see you again. Much love to you from Madeline, from me. Go forth and multiply the message. Much love. Thanks again. And we'll be in touch. Thanks. Much love. Thank you.